rather than look at large language models, we should be focusing in on specialist language models that go much deeper into cultural history, language dialects, particularly for countries where they have different regions, even within their sovereign boundaries, where they have different regions and different dialects of their own language. And that's, some of that should be open source, if not all of it.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast with Sanjay Puri. AI is changing the world faster than rules can keep up. So how do we protect people without killing progress? Each week, Sanjay brings you inside conversations with global leaders, policymakers, and innovators who are wrestling with that exact question. So if you're curious about the future of technology and how it's governed, you're in the right place. On today's podcast, we're thrilled to welcome Dr. Nick Bradshaw, founder of the South African Artificial Intelligence Association, creator of AI Expo Africa, and a key member of South Africa's National AI Strategy Working Group. He's seen AI from the boardrooms of Global North to the innovation hubs of the Global South, and is on a mission to make Africa not just a consumer, but a co-creator of AI's future.
Nick, welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Sanjay, and a lovely introduction. Sort of make me blush there a bit. But it's great to be here. And thanks for reaching out in the run-up to what we're doing with the UNITU and the first AI for Good Impact Africa Summit. And it's great to make a contribution to your podcast.
Nick, we have a global audience. We have policy leaders. We have think tank experts, we have entrepreneurs, and just people who are interested and fascinated in AI. Since we talked about the AI Expo, and we're just on the verge of having it, and the ITU relationship that you have created, can you just tell our audience a little bit about what's coming up, who's attending, and what's going on, what's so special about this?
Yeah, thanks, Sanjay. Well, just stepping back a little bit, we've been working at promoting and understanding the African AI landscape since 2017. One of the reasons for doing that was that there wasn't any data really talking about the ecosystem, how many companies are out there, in how many countries, how big are they, what size companies are out there, how long they've been trading for. So the origins of what we've been doing here was really formulated from the absence of data and actually filling that gap. And along the way, we've created AI Expo Africa as a show. We've published a magazine called Synapse to showcase the African AI innovation story. We published the State of AI in Africa report, which brought all that information together. And we actually launched that with the UNITU. And that served as a benchmark from around 2021 for us to then measure how the ecosystem has grown to the point where post-COVID, the conversation has been very much around the global north and the global south becoming much closer together when it comes to sharing knowledge and best practice on AI, regulation, responsible AI. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of actors that are working in this space, and it's still very emergent. And the Africa region, as you rightly say, doesn't necessarily just simply want to be a consumer. It wants to be a contributor and to build its own ecosystem, its own frameworks, its own models. So I think, your audience probably think, well, hang on a minute, you sound like a British guy. What the hell are you doing in Africa? Well, along the way, I met a South African lady and we got married. And I've been here 16 years. And, Africa, South Africa is my home. And I'm very passionate about us joining forces at all levels, government, NGO, business, investor, startup, academic, and seeing how we can make this a big success and a technology that will bring change in a positive way.
No, that's great to have this kind of perspective for our audience. Nick, the current global AI narrative is dominated by the U.S., China and Europe in some ways. Tell our audience, what unique role do you see? We talked about consumer, but a unique role you see Africa, especially South Africa, playing in the global AI conversation?
First of all, there has to be an understanding of the true size of Africa and then the AI ecosystem that's within it. So I think Africa is a geography, just for the audience. You can fit in North America, China, India, South America. You know, it's a much bigger geography than perhaps people realize. But actually, across the whole of the continent, the number of companies with a declared specialism in AI is about the same as the total number of companies in the state of California. So when you have a very large geography and a very spread out ecosystem, you know, it's important to understand just where is all this stuff concentrated. So the research that we've done shows that, you know, 94% of the ecosystem is in just 20 countries, or roughly 20 countries in the main, with the other 6% spread very thinly across the rest. So South Africa is sort of number one in terms of number of companies, but, you know, Nigeria is giving us a good run for the money. So I think it's not just really about the role South Africa can play in this landscape. It's about what all the countries can play. I mean, we've had a massive success on the continent with the startup called InstaDeep, which came from the founder, Karim Bergere, and his partners, you know, recently acquired by a German life sciences company for a considerable sum of money. And it's a very untold, very successful story, which has emerged from one of the smallest countries on the continent. So from north to south and east to west, there's a lot of innovation going on, but it's often hidden, or the story remains very localized. And we don't see that same breakout that you see with maybe companies from North America or China or Singapore or London or Paris. So there's a lot of innovation going on. A lot of the hard problems which are being looked at are being solved not only just by entrepreneurs, but also by academics in research. So I think there's a very healthy ecosystem, but it's very spread out. And so when we're looking at that, we have to bear that in mind. It's not the same as, you know, France, or it's not the same as Canada. It is what it is here in our region. So I think South Africa clearly has a role to play, but as do the other 53 countries as well.
A lot of our audience doesn't know the African ecosystem. So I'm going to ask you a few questions that'll maybe help dispel that. So one of the questions that came in from our audience was that AI development requires massive computational resources, you know, data centers, infrastructure. So how can African nations participate meaningfully in AI development when they're competing against countries spending billions in AI compute? Is there a different path for Africa as a leader within that region, you know, someone who is, you know, kind of built the ecosystem? Tell our audience, what is the path for Africa here?
Well, the number one, the path is collaboration. I don't think there are any large scale AI initiatives that are happening without some form of collaboration. Collaboration might mean that you've got thousands and thousands of users on a platform. You know, we have almost 4,000 members of our association. But collaboration is key. And you know, no single entity has all the answers, and no single entity has all the money. So we have to collaboratively work together and collaboratively invest in that. It's absolutely true that on the African continent, there isn't as much infrastructure as we might see in America, mainly because there isn't the concentration of capital and also the number of companies. But there are the hyperscalers are investing in the region with data centers from the likes of Microsoft, Google, Amazon, IBM. And I think also we're starting to see interest coming in then from the second tier players, where, you know, they're the companies like Teraco, Equinix, you know, NTT, that they are also building data center infrastructure. Now, within those capabilities and facilities, do they have AI compute? Some of them do, some of them don't, or they're in the process of putting it in. The most recent announcement has been from the Cassava Group, about building 5 AI factories across the continent, with the first one here in South Africa. So whilst, again, the landscape is slightly sparse, there is that foundational infrastructure there, but it's just not as ubiquitous and available as it is, say, in the global north. So again, if you are an AI entrepreneur, you're definitely going to have to collaborate either with a hyperscaler or sort of tier two provider, and look at mechanisms of, you know, jumping into things like the NVIDIA Inception program, jumping into the AWS program or the Microsoft program or the Google program, where you can access compute and have credits for your entrepreneurial endeavor. Google recently made some investments into some of the academic institutions on the continent that are doing things like language research. So we're beginning to see that investment coming in, but it's happening in pockets, and it's not universal across the whole continent, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So I think your message to our listeners is collaboration is definitely a key. So just following up on that point, Nick, I'm based here in Washington, and AI has become is increasingly becoming a geopolitical lever, you know. So in keeping that in perspective, where does Africa fit in this new AI world order? Could it risk becoming a data colony potentially for global tech powers if regulation is not thought through? Just your feedback on some of these points, Nick.
That's a good question, Sanjay. I mean, I've just been at the G20. I was on a couple of panels and networking with the people that were working quite hard and diligently in the background. I think for people that don't know how these events work, it's a lot of people in a room locked together working to reach consensus, which at the political level is very difficult to do, obviously. So I'm not a politician and I'm not a diplomat, but I'm definitely a pragmatist and a realist. So I think data sovereignty, I think, is where really we need to focus the discussion. You know, the best will in the world, we're not going to create another chip manufacturer that's making GPUs, for example. The volumes of money involved to do that are just astronomically high. And, you know, I think I always tend to try and use the pen analogy. You can buy any pen, but it's the story you write that counts. Okay, it's the data that comes out of the pen that's the most important thing. So don't try and reinvent the pen. Just be clever what you do with your story. And so I think data sovereignty, sovereign AI is the big topic right now. That has to sit then within a regulatory framework, which are still emerging. South African National Government, for example, is about to publish its AI, national AI policy this month. It's going forward for cabinet approval. So again, I think we're still at that kind of tipping point between having this debate and then getting into that detail of, okay, we accept that we might not be investing and owning the infrastructure, although in some cases we do, certainly for the hyperscalers and the tier two investors that are doing that. But it's the data that sits in those facilities and the models that will sit in those facilities where we can be smarter and agile around ownership and what we do with that data and those models. So I think that's what's going to dominate the debate in our region. I know that the macro level, if you look at like the European Union, you know, multi-country regulatory framework, there is talk of that at the African Union level, although I'm not cited on the progress. They are looking at an African Union national AI strategy. But I think it will be down to the individual countries to then formulate what they do in their own sovereign borders. So I think that's kind of where the debate is. And when I've been in various panels and conferences, particularly this year, that's been the main cut and thrust of the discussion.
So, Nick, I think you make a great point. Data sovereignty is very, very critical. Just to follow up on that point, most of a large number of AI systems are often trained on Western-centric data sets. When you look at African societies, how do we ensure that African languages, values, you know, cultures and histories and lived realities are represented in these AI systems, which is, you know, a danger in some ways?
We have a big focus in the region here naturally around looking at language research for the enableization, if that's even a word, of languages across the continent and the models to support them. There's a couple of initiatives which are active across the continent. There are 2,000 languages, if not, and way more dialects across the region. And many of them don't have a language model to enable AI services to be leveraged, you know, text to text or text to speech and speech to text. So that's a fundamental set of projects which is going on at the moment. Masakane project is the big one. It's a multi-research, multidisciplinary approach to language research. So I think that, again, we're still building those fundamental foundations to enable these capabilities to come to, well, to be birthed and to be available to everyone. It was interesting to hear also, maybe there's a change in trajectory with some of this work. And it was interesting to hear from the Spanish delegate from at the G20 recently about this idea that rather than look at large language models, we should be focusing in on specialist language models that go much deeper into cultural history, language dialects, you know, particularly for countries where they have different regions, even within their sovereign boundaries, where they have different regions and different, even different dialects of their own language. And that's, some of that should be open source, if not all of it. So I think that was quite an interesting observation to hear from the delegation. And maybe that's also something we should also be looking at. You know, who owns or who could monetize or should we monetize that model? Or should it be open to everybody? And the panel I was on yesterday was also thinking about, should all this be freely accessible to people? I know that you can. There's an element of open source to that. So I think, again, we're in this kind of bit of a melting pot transition in regard to this. So yeah, you know, in the absence of standards as well, I mean, we are working in an area where there's minimal standards. There are frameworks, and some of those frameworks vary. So things like responsible AI frameworks are emerging all the time. So it's an interesting space, and it's changing every day.
Yeah, it is definitely changing every day. Nick, there has been a lot of conversation about in the U.S. and around the world, and we are seeing a lot of job losses happening, at least in the U.S., because of AI. And how do you protect jobs, especially in, you know, developed economies? The two worries here. One is in Africa, where unemployment is also an issue. How do you balance innovation while you protect livelihoods? And also the other perspective is within South Africa, a lot of the talent is in many cases moving abroad. So how can AI play a role in making sure that the talent stays there and there are not job losses per se? And I know this is more a policy issue, but you as an ecosystem builder, do you have a perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is the debate of our time, right? What is AI going to do for the world of work and the world of jobs? There's certainly some sectors that are of immediate risk. So in the global north, I don't really like using that phrase, but in the more developed economies, they're being quite ruthless about economies of scale or cost reductions where they can automate certain aspects of their operations. So things like coders, for example, low-level coding. We're seeing apparently in the news, jobs going in that segment. I think the most vulnerable segment here in our region is the things like call centers. So they've historically, over the last sort of decade or so, we've seen quite a big shift to Africa for labor to work in skilled labor as well, to work in call centers with English, language and multiple language localization. But as AI advances beyond human level responsivity, then you can essentially have a call center on a chip, if I can use that as a kind of fairly simplistic analogy. and just cut out the middleman. Companies don't need to employ a call center company to set up a call center in another country. They can just import the stack into their server and that's it. You've got a call center. Now, will that eliminate everybody in the loop? I don't think so. We are going to need humans to supervise these machine-to-human interactions, quality, complex use cases. So I think that here in our region, where certain sectors have seen this boom, like BPO, call centers, that they are potentially at risk. The flip side to that, and you mentioned about people leaving, is that was definitely the fact pre-COVID. Now, post-COVID and the greater acceptance of remote work and a better understanding of the talent pool that's in the region. So if you look at the platform Zindi, Z-I-N-D-I, that platform has 88,000 machine learning data scientists on it. Most of them are from Africa and emerging markets. You have the ability now to become a highly skilled machine learning engineer. You can work remotely from home or from a, you know, a workspace, and you can earn a very good salary by local standards with a significant cost reduction on the same resource, say in North America, USA or Canada. And there's a greater acceptance that of those kinds of customers having a remote team in another country, particularly in emerging markets. So I think the post-COVID dynamic has caused a slight shift there. Now, I don't have any hard facts to give you hard numbers on that, but certainly there's a bigger incentive for people to stay local, whilst there is still the desire for people to migrate and get a job elsewhere. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, and there are sectors at risk, but also the recent research that came out is showing that poorer demographics in emerging markets are experimenting more with this technology outside of work than any other demographic, and that young people are leading the charge there. So again, I think this is really interesting post ChatGPT, LLM, agentic space that we're in now, where actually young people could even take a lead, and specifically a bit like way Africa took a lead with mobile, electronic money. That could be something, yeah, particularly as AI moves to mobile and the edge, where we do another leapfrog. So yeah, it's an interesting time right now.
And Africa is a very young continent. The demographics are really in favor of Africa because there is this whole issue, especially in Western societies or global north, about the demographic bomb facing these societies. I think Africa offers that opportunity. And as you said, when you look at mobile payments, you look at things like M-Pesa and stuff like that, they have done an incredible job. And I think Nick's kind of talking to it, the opportunities that young people have and AI could have for them. Nick, finally, you brought about this incredible partnership between ITU and, you know, for this AI for Good Africa, and then with these AI Expo Africa. Just briefly tell our listeners, how did this partnership come about? And for companies, you know, you got all these big tech companies coming in, but there might be mid-sized companies in Europe and Asia, etc. Why, this is your opportunity to tell them, why should they be coming to the AI Expo Africa and the AI for Good Impact Africa? Tell them a little bit finally for that.
I think we started this interview with collaboration being key. So I attended the AI for Good Global Summit in Geneva in 2019, and actually for me that was my first exposure to this whole industry of AI for Good. I didn't really know much about it beforehand. When I got to the conference and met the organizers, Fred Werner being the lead organizer, now the head of strategy at the ITU. It was amazing. It was just amazing to see what use cases there were. Some of the fascinating use cases in healthcare, caring for the elderly, disease, standards, solving hard problems. It was really interesting. So I said to Fred and the team, we'd love to host something like this in our region. So they joined us later that year at AI Expo Africa in 2019, which is our second show. And we decided to try and work on this as a goal. But of course, COVID occurred shortly after. So things went on hold. And now finally this year, 2025, we are welcoming them to our region, to Johannesburg, at the end of October. But also that discussion has led them to look at multiple outreach programs in other regions of the world. I think China, India, South America. So whilst this edition of what they're doing, we're very proud to host them in Johannesburg alongside AI Expo Africa. And that's the 8th edition of our event. The chances are they'll probably take it to a different country, a different region in the subsequent years. So yeah, we're proud that we've kind of the test bed for this first edition. And, you know, we're working on a very exciting program. We're probably looking around sort of 2,900 delegates this year, around 110 exhibitors, 65 startups. So, yeah, it's going to be a great gathering for anyone that wants to come and understand the Southern African AI ecosystem, the AI for Good impact ecosystem. And we've got investors in the room. We've got 72 talks. We've got, I think it's 22 workshops. So there's something in there for everyone. And yeah, we'd love to have welcome all your listeners who can make it to Johannesburg to join us.
Nick, this has been fascinating. You know, what strikes me most is how you're not just talking about AI in abstract terms. You're actually building the infrastructure. You're convening the stakeholders and really doing the hard work of making AI a reality across Africa. And as we rush to deploy AI systems, we really need voices like yours to remind us to think about long-term impacts, to include diverse perspectives, and to ensure that innovation serves humanity broadly, not just the powerful few. So thank you for the incredible work you're doing. AI Expo Africa sounds really like exactly the kind of convening space we need, bringing together 3,000 people from government, business, startups, civil societies, just across the board, and that's how we build the future we want to see. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe to Regulating AI Podcast, share this episode, and join the global dialogue about creating AI governance that's fair, democratic, and innovation friendly. We are all for innovation, and we need your voice in this conversation. And until next time, I'm Sanjay Puri, and remember, the future of AI isn't written yet. Let's write it together responsibly. Nick, thank you so much. This was fascinating. We could have gone for a long, long more time, but I know you have things to do. You've got a big conference coming up. So thank you to you from all our listeners.
Thank you very much, Sanjay. And again, a great opportunity to reach out to your listeners and just appreciate this opportunity to be with you today.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI podcast with Sanjay Puri. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to leave a comment. We'd love to hear what you thought. Share it with someone curious about the future of AI and join us next time for more stories and insights from the leaders shaping what's ahead. Right here on the Regulating AI podcast.